The Last Rose of Summer, Episode 2. Amongst the belongings of his dying uncle, Mitchell has found a tape, an unauthorized message medium. The new and unfamiliar music it carried has sent him in search of information on an earlier time. The governing computer of Central Command has learned of Mitchell's search and issued an instruction for his detention.
Miss, excuse me.
Yes?
I wonder if you can help me. I'm looking for my uncle, Arthur Mitchell. He's supposed to be ill here.
If he's here, then he's not ill. He's convalescing. Visiting is Tuesdays and Fridays. Today is neither.
Oh, please, miss. I came all the way from the city.
That is neither here nor there. Rules are rules.
I expect I'm the first visitor he's had.
It isn't my responsibility anyway. Sister Roberts is in charge of the patients out in the grounds.
Ah, so he's somewhere outside then.
Oh, this is too much. He's in his wheelchair at the far end of the gardens by the river. If Sister Roberts catches you, I'm having nothing to do with it.
You're a very charitable lady, sister.
Are you trying to be funny?
Uncle Arthur, is that you?
Huh? Who's calling my name?
It's me, Uncle Arthur. Remember?
Well, of course I remember. I may be a tad short-sighted, but I'm hardly senile. How are you, boy?
Fine, thanks.
Good. How did you get past the Amazons? They employ here as nurses. You're only supposed to visit on Tuesdays and Fridays.
Ready wit and natural charm. I used it on a lady with a face like the bottom of a bed bag.
Yeah, well, two of them fit that description. One before use and one after. Did you bring what I asked you for?
Oh, I had a devil of a job to find it. Was this the bottle you meant?
Ah, that's the one. Look, the seal isn't even broken. I dread to think what a malt whiskey would cost on the black market these days. I'd offer you some, lad, but I'm afraid you wouldn't know how to appreciate it.
Oh, how are you feeling, Uncle?
Secure in my fate, I'm afraid. I've observed that patients in this place arrive in wheelchairs and they leave on trolleys a few weeks later. I'm rather convinced it's something they put in the food.
Now, Uncle, you shouldn't think like
that. You think I'm joking? I've been watching, observing. Two kitchens, secure as fortresses. One of them, only one, mind. They have to show a pass to get in. Two sets of crockery for patients and staff. Two sets of cutlery. Supplies delivered in lock vans on Mondays and Thursdays.
Oh, look, I'm sure you're...
You're imagining things? Oh, yeah, of course I am. Geriatric ramblings. I'm imagining that there isn't a patient in the place who's been here longer than 2 months.
What are you saying?
Oh, I can't get worked up about it. When going to bed at night, he should consider how, just as he now lies down himself, soon strange hands will lay his body in the grave.
What?
But damn it, I'm quoting. Don't spoil it.
Sorry.
Snowball's gone. Can't remember it all anyway. So, tell me, what have you been doing, lad?
Well, the usual. Nothing, really.
Yeah. There's not a lot to fill the life of a citizen outside the library. I suppose that's why they built it.
Built the library?
Well, why else? The citizens build themselves a central command to do all the work for them, and they say, keep us happy. So, central command builds the library, and everybody's over the moon. You keep a certain proportion of menial workers and promise them citizens' papers one day, and there you have it. Perfect society. Small, stable, ticking like a watch. Or something like that.
Well, that isn't right.
Well, in theory...
No, I mean, that wasn't the process. I know what really happened.
Oh. How?
Well, when I was looking through your things for that bottle of whiskey, I found a reel of tape. It wasn't in an authorised cassette or anything, just an illicit tape.
Oh, I remember that. It was my father's. Couldn't be bothered to hand it in.
Well, I managed to put it in a cassette and play it. Unofficially, of course.
Of course. Well, what was it?
Well, it was music. I'd never heard anything like it before. I mean, it was ridiculous, really, but I wanted to laugh and cry at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds no more credible than somebody getting emotional over a roll of wallpaper.
Yeah, no, I understand. Go on.
Well, I wanted to look for something similar in the library, but I didn't know how to ask without giving myself away over the tape.
Yeah.
I started to ask around shops and stores, anywhere they played the music. Everywhere, it was the same answer. Either a library cassette or pipe direct from Central Command. That's using radio waves.
You were talking about Central Command.
That's right. I found this old library. No tapes, just books.
Books?
Yeah, hundreds of them. It seems that this place used to be a government archive in the days before Central Command.
Wow.
They let me choose my own books and take them away.
So how does all this connect up?
Well, it was what was in the books. They covered a long period, and I was able to piece quite a lot together. You have to imagine the very early computers as big, fast-adding machines.
Yeah.
They worked on what were called programs, and these were a series of very simple instructions which broke a problem down into a long series of yes-no questions. It was like explaining something to an idiot in easy stages.
I hope that wasn't aimed at me.
Of course not. No, all this information was easy to come by, because in the early days, there seems to have been some fear of computers. People called them electronic brains and had nightmares about them taking over. All the literature made the point that they weren't minds in their own right, just a very sophisticated tool. And at the time, that was true.
So, what happened to change it?
The program. A lot of play was made about the fact that if computers were brains, they were far too stupid to be of any threat. They were fast and they were efficient, but basically all they could do was repeat the thought processes outlined in the program and treat every problem exactly the same way, you see? And since the programmer was just a human being, it all made the threat of the computer fantasy look rather silly.
Logical.
Very. Even more logical was the proposal that computers could be made more efficient if they were used to write the programs.
Ah, I'm beginning to see.
You know, by this time, all the big privately owned firms had computers. They bought them to make bookkeeping easier and then used them to make decisions because they were so much more impartial than people.
Sure.
Efficiency and credit were the same thing to them, so they grabbed at the idea of using the computer itself as an aid to writing the program. This way, the machine could be stretched to their limits, and there was no man-made program complicated enough to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The next step was to use these fully programmed computers to design the next generation of computers. Now, we're moving into the area where the idiot electronic mind is becoming less of an idiot with each new design.
Yes.
You see, they're getting so complex that men can't begin to understand them. They don't even build them anymore. The computers have been geared up to assembly lines to do the jobs themselves. So, you see, in the end, we've a computer which can continually redesign and rebuild itself. A central command.
But still a public servant.
In a manner of speaking. If the original program concept is to run your society with a greater degree of efficiency, the ultimate computer will do that to the ultimate degree. It all depends on whether you consider that to be of service.
Well, this is all very plausible. But I can't believe in that kind of takeover with nobody making any objection. You'd have riots, protests, freedom demonstrations. We haven't had anything like that in living memory.
Yeah, well, you see, I don't think it happened like that. It was so gradual that, well, you'd hardly notice. And if you did, the logic of the arguments in favour was enough to make you look like a crank.
Yes.
Try and imagine the situation. Hundreds of computers working on the drudgery details of every aspect of everyday life. When a problem crops up that doesn't fit into the pigeonhole of any of those areas, link up two or more computers and let them sort it out between them.
True.
Why even bother with human interference? Or better still, establish a central clearing bank where a main computer coordinates the activities of all the others. That's central command, Uncle Arthur.
I see.
We've always thought of it as one machine down Riverside, but it isn't.
Huh?
No, it's hundreds, maybe thousands, all over the country, and they all talk with the one voice. In its eyes, we're all average men, and it ensures we behave as such. You said that the citizens made Central Command.
Yeah.
Well, it was the other way around. Central Command took all functions onto itself and made the citizens. It made the citizens and it gave them the library and turned them into average men and women, the only kind it can deal with to maximum efficiency.
Shh, shh, shh. The nurse is coming. Now, listen to me, lad. What have you done with these books? Did you take them home?
No, I rented a locker.
Well, you must get them back to the library.
I can't. The library's gone for microfilming.
Then get them and burn them. Don't leave any trace at all, do you understand? If Central Command checks the book index and finds that you've got them, it could bring trouble.
I just feel so powerless.
Well, look, but bide your time. The chance will come.
You must go now. Sister Robert is about to come out to check all the patients in the grounds.
Oh, come again, Uncle Arthur.
Yeah, they'll probably have me poisoned by the end of the month.
It's naughty of you to talk like that. Sister Roberts will be cross.
Madam, I have every regard for your professional qualifications, but would you mind not talking to me as if I were the cat?
Goodbye, Uncle Arthur.
Goodbye, lad. Take care. That was my nephew, you know.
And if he comes again, it'll have to be on a Tuesday or a Friday. Now give me the bottle he brought you.
Eh? What do you mean?
I saw it all from the house. Give it to me. If Sister Roberts approves, it can go onto the ward trolley, then everybody may share it.
You mean I'll never see it again?
No, we can't have you poisoning yourself.
No, not when you can do it so much better.
Hello, Randall. What? No, this is Detective Inspector Randall. No, this is the Central Police Division. Well, what number did you dial then? Well, I'm sorry, this isn't it. No, I've no idea what number you want. I beg your pardon?
Another satisfied customer, Chief.
He said, call yourself a bloody detective and rang off. Why didn't I stay a citizen, Killoran? I could be sitting at home now with a box of chocolates and a comic.
Feast your eyes on this instead. We've got a direct memo from Central Command. It's been lying in the traffic control in tray for the last 24 hours.
Oh, hell, throw it over quick. You read this?
In the lift.
Naughty. Mitchell, eh? Do we know him?
Doesn't look like it. Central Command would have given us the security computer reference.
Just testing. Observe and report, it says. Have we got the personal data?
Printouts in your in-tray. There's also a mention in the Daily Bulletin in connection with some missing printed material from one of the old libraries. It seems to have been loaned on Mitchell's library card number.
Well, I suppose we'd better go and see him. Can't see him from panic, though, can you?
Just arrived for you, sir.
Okay.
Well, what's it say?
It's from the security computer. It's directing that Mitchell should be a grade 2 operation.
Good Lord, what's he done? Well, never mind. Get on to stores and fix us up with some radios, will you? Hello, will you put me through to services, please?
And I was looking forward to a quiet night.
Hello, services. I've got a grade 2. Look, I'll need half a dozen men tonight and...
Baxter!
Huh? Oh, Mitchell. Sorry, old man. I didn't see you.
You're not still nervous about us opening the library's cassette, are you?
No, what do you mean?
Us. Me, then. How have you been?
Oh, so-so. You?
Quite busy. Just got off the train. Been to the country.
Oh, your uncle?
That's right. He's looking very frail. You're going to the library?
Yes. I haven't been down to Riverside in the last 2 weeks or so.
I'll walk with you then. I'm going that way myself. Do you know why it's called Riverside?
Well, not really, no. I suppose there must have been a river thereabouts at some time or other.
There still is.
What?
A river. It runs right under Central Command. I've been reading about it.
Don't believe I've had that, eh?
No, probably not. This river used to be the centre of the old city. It had boats on and everything. Feel like taking a look?
Oh, I don't know. It might be an offence.
Oh, come on, Baxter. There's no harm in just looking.
Wouldn't be so sure.
Oh, forget it then. I'll go alone.
Well, hang on then. I'll just come and look from a distance.
There you are.
I never even knew this was here. It's such a size.
Yeah, you can see how Central Command was built to stretch from one bank to the other. There's a reason for that. It draws the water up to use in keeping all the equipment cool. It's several degrees warmer when it comes out the other side.
Do you think we can peek underneath?
I don't see why not. Hey, look, there's a path. It's just covered in weeds.
It can't have been used for years.
Well, this is no picnic spot, is it? Follow me down and keep your hands above the nettles. You see what I mean? Those bars are to stop all this driftwood from being swept underneath.
How wide would you say it was?
Oh, it must be 300-400 yards at least.
It's not like any riverbank I've seen.
No. Under all these weeds, though, it's man-made. If you look closely, you can see, look, old concrete there, all broken up. I'm wondering what it's like on the other side of those bars.
You mean underneath Central Command? Oh, count me out of that one, old man.
Naturally. I think if I can walk out along the bars over the river, there's a gap I can squeeze through.
You'd do it on your own, then.
Look, it's easy. Look, there's plenty of footholds.
Careful, old man. That metal's rusty.
Mitchell! As soon as I'd hit the water, the current pulled me under the bars and held me down as I was swept along. I was out in the middle and there was nothing to grab, nothing to hold on to. I could see the surface, but I couldn't strike out for it. The breath had been knocked out of me by the fall. Suddenly there was rotten wood everywhere, a pier or a jetty of some kind, and I'd been swept straight into it. I broke the surface and the air stank, but I didn't care. After a couple of minutes, I could take stock of the situation. The current was holding me against a large wooden crossbeam that was embedded at one end in the sheer stone embankment. The light was peculiar. It came from below, reflected up through the water. I could see its patterns dancing on the concrete roof above me. I was hanging on to what seemed to have been an old mooring place for boats, but the planking had all rotted away and only the supporting timbers remained. There were stone steps leading up to the level of the old embankment, and I knew I'd have to make for those. When I reached the steps, it was all I could do just to lie on them and gasp like a dying fish. My head ached like poison, and the water had been cold. In the end, I climbed on my hands and knees and finally made it to level ground. I've never seen anything like what was around me then, before or since. The embankment was like a broad walkway with the level of the river about 20 yards below on the other side of an ornate parapet. It stretched ahead for over a mile, but it was impossible to see its full length. At intervals, there stood decorated metal street lamps encrusted with the same thick moss that lay over everything. As I walked forward, it was difficult to keep my footing on the slime, but I was drawn by a faint gleam of light in the distance, deep under Central Command. On some walls, there were signs too overgrown to read. Further on, it became too dark even to try. But the light in the distance drew me, and if I heard anything out in the darkness, I was oblivious to it. At last, I could see, out in the river, the great rusting hulk of an old ship. It was turned on its side with half its decks underwater. A mass of bright details and sharp shadows illuminated from above by a round hole in the floor of Central Command. In the red haze beyond the hole, I could see all kinds of machinery. I couldn't even begin to guess at its purpose, but not so with the wide tube that descended to the river and drew up water to feed the cooling systems. By now, I was realizing that something was wrong. What had started as a rustling on the edge of perception now became more insistent, and as I strained my eyes into the darkness, I could see hundreds, thousands of tiny red points. There was a sea of rats encircling me. They were keeping a distance, but every time I tried to move, they moved with me. Those in front fell over themselves to retreat, whilst those behind took the opportunity to push the circle a little further. I had no delusions. To them, I was meat. When I burst into a run, they came after me in a wave. I simply ran over those in front and heard their screams whilst others bit and clawed at my legs. Some of them even jumped and hung onto my clothing with their teeth as they scrambled to hang on with their paws. How long I drifted, I don't know. I'd entered in twilight and emerged into darkness. The current swept me downstream and out from under Central Command, and I finally crawled out in a backwater. But I knew what I'd seen. I had looked into the underbelly of Central Command, and I knew it was vulnerable. Inside, it was as soft and fragile as any of us. I'd resented the machine, but now I'd found a way to hate it. I hated it for that great dead landscape in its cellars and for the rats that crawled in it. But even more, I hated it for the great dead landscape it had created outside and the army of little men that it made to crawl there.
Oh, one more flight of stairs and I've been flat out. Ring the bell, will you?
Doesn't work, sir.
Oh.
Yes?
Oh, good evening, Mrs. Mitchell. We're police officers. I'll show you a card, Killoran.
There you are, ma'am.
We'd like to speak to your husband, if you don't mind.
But he isn't in.
That's all right, Mrs. Mitchell. We don't mind waiting. May we come in?
Well, I'm not sure.
Pretty nice home you have here, if you don't mind me saying so, Mrs. Mitchell.
I'll just close the door, shall I?
Well, won't you sit down?
Ah, thank you.
Very kind of you, Mrs. Mitchell.
Neil, have you thought that Mrs. Mitchell might like some tea or coffee?
I'm sorry, I suppose I ought to have offered.
Just leave it to me, ma'am. All you have to do is point me in the right direction.
Oh, yes. The kitchen's through there. You'll find...
All right, ma'am, I can manage.
Now, Mrs. Mitchell, I expect you're wondering what all this is about.
I should say so. I haven't had time to think.
Steady, old lad!
Oh, nothing broken.
Now, to begin with, I don't want you to worry. Your husband isn't hurt and he hasn't done anything wrong.
Then what's the matter?
Well, it concerns some information from one of the old libraries. We're in the process of transferring the last ones to microfilm at Central Command. I suppose you can guess what it must look like. Some of the stuff hasn't been looked at in years. Anyway, when we came to check through the catalogues, it seemed there was some material in there that should never have been available. And furthermore, it seems that your husband has come by this material somehow.
And what is this material, Mr...?
It's Randall, ma'am, Inspector Randall. Mm. I can't actually tell you that, as the material's got a security classification. I'm sure we can clear it up in no time. When are you expecting your husband home, Mrs. Mitchell?
I really couldn't say. He's gone off to visit some relative or other. I suppose he'll turn up soon to eat.
Mm. You any idea where he is now?
Inspector Randall, I have no idea where he is now. And nor can I say that I really care.
Look, I'm not trying to take an interest in your personal life. I know it's nothing to do with me.
Oh, tea's all right with everybody. It's all I can find. Where shall I put the tray?
Good evening, Mr. Collinson. Any mail for me before I go up?
Not today, Mr. Mitchell. I say, sir, your clothes are a frightful mess.
Yes, I got a bit wet this afternoon. Can you call the lift for me?
I'm afraid the lift's out of order again, Mr. Mitchell. Decrepitude would be a reasonable diagnosis.
Do without using the stairs. It means I'll have to pass old Mr. Greenbaum's place, and he's bound to drag me in to listen to that deadly music of his.
Oh, I find it rather pleasant myself.
Could do with avoiding him, though, in this state. Will you, turn a blind eye if I use the fire escape for once?
Well, I think that could easily be done, sir.
Thanks. That means I can get straight in through my bedroom window. Oh, something I noticed. There's a car parked just down the street. I thought this was a no-vehicle zone.
Ooh, unloading, perhaps, or official business?
I expect that's it. Good night.
Good night, sir.
Tango to Alpha. Tango to Alpha. Do you receive?
This is Alpha. Killoran speaking. I'm in the kitchen, so keep the level down. Randall and the subject's wife are in the next room.
Acknowledged. Mitchell's left the entrance hall and is using the fire escape to ascend. I can't quite see from here, but I'd say he was going to enter from the western side of the building by a window.
Acknowledged. Alpha to Omega. Are you in position?
Omega receiving. We're in position on the roof of the building. If the subject ascends to this level, we can intercept.
Acknowledged, Omega. I'm leaving the channels open, so stand by for alert and instructions. Tango, report on subject position.
Subject has reached fourth level.
Stand by. Alpha out.
So you can see why we want...
Sir.
What is it?
Change of plans. Fire escape. Right now.
Mrs. Mitchell, where's the access to the fire escape?
It's through his bedroom over there. Why?
What the hell's going on?
Grab him, Neil! He's bolted the door!
Give me the radio and break it down!
What are you doing? Oh, stop that!
Alpha to all units. Randall speaking. Mitchell's on the fire escape and running. He's gone! Alpha to Tango. Any sign?
I'm at the bottom of the staircase. He can't get past here.
Alpha to Omega. What about the roof?
No sign of him up here. He must still be on the stairs.
Acknowledged. Tango units, ascend fire escape with caution. Omega, you hold your position on the roof and we should force him up towards you. Disable if necessary, but do not kill. We want him alive.
Oh, God.
Oh, what's the matter with her?
Dead faint, sir.
Oh, that's all we need. Look, put her somewhere out of the way.
Tango reporting. Second floor, no sign.
Omega reporting. Nothing on the roof.
Sir, what if he gets in on another floor? That one's an open window.
There's a man on every exit. We'll have to search the building, but we'll still get him.
Tango here. Fourth floor, no sign.
What, nothing at all?
I'm using the flashlight, but it's not much help. Too much wrought iron and too many shadows. Fifth floor and level with you now, sir.
Right, you carry on up. Omega?
He's not arrived on the roof. I think he must have spotted us.
Damn! Get her a glass of water, will you? Next thing, she'll have us on a brutality charge.
Right away.
Oh, God, what's happening to me?
To you, nothing. Just keep your head down and you'll be all right.
We've reached the roof now, sir. No sign of him anywhere on the stairs.
Could you have missed him?
It's possible.
Get that, will you?
Sergeant Bennett says the men are watching the exits.
I followed it all on the radio. We've managed to check all the flats adjacent to the fire escape, except for one. That was on the fourth floor. Tenant name of Greenbaum.
Then we best get down. Alpha to Omega.
Receiving.
Look, sort out two of you to stay up there. The rest of you come down and help in the search. Work your way down from the top floor and keep a man on the staircase at all times. Killoran, you stay here with Mrs. Mitchell. I'm going down to the fourth.
It's this way, sir.
What do we know about this place?
Tenant's name, Greenbaum. At middle 60s, a music lover. Got it on full blast. Collinson, he's the caretaker. Reckons he's a bit deaf.
I see what you mean about the music. Mr. Collinson?
That's me, sir.
Do you have pass keys to these flats?
I do, sir.
This is my warranty. The section I'm pointing to shows my clearance and powers of search in emergency situations. Do you understand?
I do, sir.
Then I'm asking you to open this door for me.
I had the key ready all along, sir.
Right. Now, let's just think this one out. Now, Sergeant Bennett, I want you to stand on one side of the door and turn the key. I'll kick the door open and go straight in, and you follow. Is that clear?
Understood, sir.
Right. Good. Now, turn the key.
hand. Now!
Any sign of him?
No. And he didn't use this window. The catches are painted over.
Here's our Mr. Greenbaum anyway. Looks like he's...
Oh, dead drunk. I can see the bottle on the floor. No wonder he slept through everything. Your radio, Sergeant. That's the man on the roof. Can't we turn that music off?
It's a public broadcast speaker. You can turn it down low, but not right
well,
off.
Will you do it, then? Alpha receiving.
Sorry, sir. I think we've lost him.
Is everything all right up there?
I've been laid out for the past few minutes, sir. Clark and I were hiding on the roof when we heard Mitchell coming up the fire escape. He must have hidden lower down while the other party came up. He wanted to pick something up, and when we challenged him, he swung it at us. I think it was either a long plank or a ladder.
Go on.
Well, whatever it was, as soon as he heard it, he swung it at us. I think his idea had been to use it to get over to the next roof. Anyway, I caught one over the ear and went out like a light. When I came to, he'd gone.
And what?
Well, Clark, sir. The ladder must have knocked him over the parapet. He fell down 7 floors. He's dead, sir.
Oh, stay where you are. I'll send someone up for you. Kilauren, did you catch any of that?
I heard most of it.
Bring Mrs. Mitchell down. I'll meet you on the stairs. Sergeant Bennett, come with me. Collinson will lock up here. Bennett, I want you to stay in the flat upstairs until I can arrange a permanent surveillance. It'll take about 2 hours.
Very good, sir.
So, are you in on the fire escape?
Well, either that or something even more obvious.
What do you mean?
When we broke into his bedroom, did you look behind the door?
No.
Neither did I. I think he stood in the corner while we made fools of ourselves. Mrs. Mitchell, have you any objection to coming with us?
She hasn't said a word while this has been going on.
My God, what a monstrous cock-up this has turned out to be. A routine pickup for interrogation. All you need is a card and a polite manner. Then we get a grade 2 security directive straight from the computer, and now we've got a murderer on the loose.
There's another thing, sir. The computer profile on Mitchell made him out to be as timid as anything. But as soon as the pressure went on, he became as cunning as a cat.
That's right. The simple fact is, we don't even know who we're dealing with now.
The Last Rose of Summer, written by Stephen Gallagher. You can hear episode 3 at the same time next week.
The Last Rose of Summer was produced by Tony Hawkins and Pete Baker of Piccadilly Radio, Manchester.